Hi, friends, and welcome to the By Faith podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on By Faith, we're talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry. And today, my guest is Sarah Beals. Sarah lives in Brockton, Massachusetts, and her husband, Peter, serves as the youth pastor and business administrator for their church. I asked Sarah to join me on By Faith because she represents a whole lot of pastors' wives out there. They serve together at a small rural church and have been there for several decades. Sarah and I cover lots of ground in this conversation. We talk about being a Christian in New England, the importance of hospitality in her ministry. We talk about youth ministry, and we talk about friendship in a small church context, as well as parenting kids while we are serving alongside our husbands in ministry. I'm pretty sure you're going to be encouraged by this conversation with Sarah because I was as we were recording it together. We have lots to learn from our sisters like Sarah, who are serving in small church and rural contexts. So here, friends, is my conversation with Sarah Beals. I am super excited to welcome Sarah Beals to the podcast. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
I'm so glad to have you. We've actually connected online for over many years, but I've never talked to you before. So this is really exciting to me to get to know you and to know about your ministry context and your life. So why don't you start by introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about where your family, where you're serving, your context.
Okay. So I'm Sarah Beals, and I have been married to my husband, Peter, for 30 years this August. And we have 6 children. We have ages 27 to 8.
Wow.
I know. So I have 3 married children. I have 1 that's in college, and I have 2 that are at home, and I have 3 granddaughters.
Oh my goodness. That is a full life and an amazingly full life.
It's so much fun. My kids tell me I am not the same person that raised them as a grandmother.
Do the grandbabies live close by?
So 2 of them do, and 1 of them is in South Carolina, which is hard. But this year, it's been so nice. We've seen my granddaughter in South Carolina several times. Oh, it's been so fun. And actually, she's coming up this weekend for 15 days.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, so we live in New England, and right now we're in the middle of our family's cranberry harvest. So we're 3rd-generation Ocean Spray cranberry growers, which means my entire extended family is within 15 minutes of each other and has been for over 100 years.
Does everyone work for, does everyone help with the harvest?
Well, we do help in our own ways. Like, I'm not out in the bogs raking in the berries, but I do, like, I have three tours to give to schools and stuff this week. So Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I'll be giving harvest tours.
That is so fun.
It's beautiful. Have you ever seen that done?
Well, no, but I have seen your Instagram pictures of when the berries are ready. And it is so beautiful.
It is. You never, ever get tired of it. It's amazing. To me, it's fall. Like, that is fall.
Well, for anyone listening, you've got it. I'll link to Sarah's Instagram account because you have to go look at it. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't have known that's how cranberries came to be.
Yes. Yes.
So it's really neat.
Yeah. If you're drinking Ocean Spray cranberry juice, you're probably drinking our family's berries. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
So your family goes way back in New England.
Yes. My great grandfather had a bog 100 years ago, and it's been running. And actually, my daughter, Emily, and her family are living in the homestead at the original site. So it's been in use for years and years and years. So it's kind of nice. If you've ever read anything by Wendell Berry, where people just are like there and they never leave, that's agricultural. You can't move the bogs, so you can't move.
Yes. My sister and brother-in-law farm, so they are tied to land. So I understand that. Well, so you've been a New Englander your whole life.
Yep.
Your family goes back generations. Tell us about what it's like. Tell us, for those of us who do not live in New England, tell us about that context, especially the spiritual context.
Okay. Well, I live 20 minutes from Plymouth, Massachusetts, where the Pilgrims arrived on the shores seeking, religious freedom. And so I actually think that we have a really rich heritage of Christianity in this area. But I also feel like because of that, there's like a stronghold too. Like there's a lot of cults in our area and there's a lot of tensions. And it's right now the area is spiritually dead. And I feel like Satan has kind of just attacked that for that reason. I don't know. It's right now it's a rough place to minister, not because the people are any different really than other places in the country, but just because there is not a lot of church growth. There's not a lot of churches. There are no churches on every corner in New England, or if there are, they're being put into, you know, made into condos or things like that, where, you know, it's not the same as the South. I've never lived in the South. My daughter lives in South Carolina. So when I go down, I'm kind of envious of all of the churches and the full parking lots. And most New England churches are, you know, 50 to 75 to 100 people. And I was talking to a couple of friends about this interview just so I would just kind of get their ideas and represent them well, too. And they were saying that they have 60,000 people in their towns and maybe 3 churches of 100 people that are gospel preaching churches. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of different churches, but just, it's a hard area. It's expensive to live in. And, you know, it's a quite a secular area, but yeah, it's a different place to serve. There's no perk to being a Christian culturally here. You know, there's no, I mean, if you're a Christian, you're kind of on the outs, not on the outs, but like, there's no Christian environment. It's very secular, even in the schools and things like that. So it's different than the South. When I go to the South, I think, oh, there's a Bible verse on the menu at the restaurant, you know, a little thing. And I think, did we just let, you know, enter the land of Oz or what, you know?
Yeah. So tell us about your church and where you're serving and what role you and your husband are playing there.
Okay. So, we serve at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Brockton, and Peter's dad founded the church. And so we filled in as youth leaders 28 years ago. And so we've been doing that. I honestly, when I think about how did we become youth leaders, we get into this role? I don't even know. We just filled the need and then we grew to love it. And then 18 years ago, Peter left his job. He worked as an insurance agent. We had 5 kids. I was expecting my daughter, Hope. And he was kind of at the top of his game in that company. He was doing work for the CEO. And we both felt like God was leading us to move away from whatever it was by certain conversations and just devotions that we were having. We just felt like, you know what, this is not what we're supposed to be doing long term. So we prayed about it for about a year because we do things slow in New England. You know, you just start praying about things. And we were actually surprised one night at the church when one of the pastors got up and said, you know, we need to hire a business administrator for the church. And we were like, we're not disappointed that we were going to stay at our own church. Cause you know, you think, okay, God's going to take you somewhere or they're going to do something, maybe missions, maybe, but it was like, we're going to stay and serve here full time. So through a long process, we ended up becoming full time business. I say we. Peter became
the full-time youth pastor. No, I get it. We always say we. Yeah.
Youth pastor and business administrator. And we've done that for 18 years. So, yeah. So we work with the teens on a weekly basis. We do, you know, their classes. We have monthly ACFs on Sunday night. We had all the kids here and we have food and they bring their instruments and they sing and they have a good time. And then we have Bible quizzes that we host every 4 times a year. So that's when like local Bible preaching churches or whoever wants to join, they give their kids this passage and they all learn it for 6 weeks. We study it together. We write questions and then we come together and they kind of just quiz as it's just for fun. You know, we have food and games, but if you've done a 4-year stint in our youth group, then that means that you learned 16 huge chunks of scripture in 4 years. So that's like, I don't know, I'm not good at math, but that's like 80 passages, 80
that's
chapters.
That's amazing. I love it. So
it's excellent. Yeah, it's really good. It's a good thing. And really the learning, the game and the quizzing and all that, that's the fun part, but the study and getting that God's word into their mind, they like absorb it so young, you know, they're so young. They just learn it from reading it every day. So it's great. And you know, other things like that. We're going mountain climbing. We just involved in their lives, giving them things where they can be together as a younger body, times where they can serve older people in the church. They're all active in the church. So, you know, they're the future of the church, mm-hmm. these kids. And so it seems like there's just so much potential for them, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we love it. We have the best and most fun ministry in the church, we always say.
So yeah. I would love to know what it's like. You described the context in which you're serving, but what is it like to be a pastor's wife in that context? I'm wondering how people outside the church might view that role, or even inside the church.
I don't know, because I've been there for so long. Like, we've been in that church for 30 years. I feel like people just know us. They knew me as a teenager. You know, I got married when I was 21. I say teenager, I was 21, but I just feel like they're, you know, people come and go, but we're friends. And I feel like people know that I'm there to help them if they want to. I have a lot of, you know, we minister to the teens, but we also, you know, I'll talk with moms if they have problems. You know, teens aren't the most, you know, calm years. So sometimes things do come up where we have to, you know, get some outside views. So I spend time with the moms. I spend time with the teens. It's just, you know, just being a friend there to them. I certainly don't have all the answers for them, but they know we're there to serve them. And then, you know, I have my own ministries as well. Like, you know, I've always involved in the nursery or second hour, or I sang for years in the choir. I don't know. I just kind of do whatever I feel like God wants me to do with that in that season. And when the kids were really young, I wasn't doing all of that. I was, you know, I had babies on my hips.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know how that is. You just feel like some seasons you're floundering a little bit because you're not really sure, what am I doing?
Yes.
I'm getting everybody to church with shoes on their feet.
Right.
You know?
Right. I think a lot of pastors' wives think that. I just talked to one yesterday who's like, she has small children, and like, I get there, I get my kids there, and that's how I can best serve my husband right now.
Yeah.
And she's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we've been in it for the long run. So a lot of our kids have come and gone, and now they have kids as well. And one of the things that has been really encouraging to me over the years is that you don't see a lot of fruit in youth ministry until later on. They come, they go to college, and then you see things down the road as they get married. But I had one girl who, for whatever reason, God has kind of given us these families where they weren't always intact. And there were a lot of families where the dad was absent. And so in the young years, I would be making food for the teens. They'd be at our house. They would, you know, I felt like I was a short order cook sometimes, you know, for the teens. And that's what I was doing. And that's what I could do with babies and five children. And years later, one of the girls in the youth group who did not have a dad told me, and I can just remember this whole time period feeling like a complete, like, what am I even doing? Like, I was born to change diapers. You know, that was my mindset. Like, is this all I was good for? But she just said, it was so helpful for me to see a husband and wife in the house, just in normal, marital, healthy relationships. Like, that was huge to me as a kid, because all I had seen is fighting and discord. And so, of course, you know, that was humbling, because I'm thinking, you know, I wasn't serving in the ways I wanted to serve, you know? And so what was God doing here? You know what I mean? We can be like that sometimes, you know, like we hold things really tightly.
Yes. Yes. We have an agenda. We have our own agenda how we want to serve. But often God uses us in those ways we're not even realizing that people are watching. Yes, I love that. And I love that you've talked about hospitality, because I know you're really passionate about that. And you have found it to be an effective means of reaching women in such a spiritually dead region of the country. So I'd love to hear more about that and how you view hospitality now.
Okay. I think hospitality, okay, I really love hospitality. And I think that where we are on the map, if I were to map out the churches by putting stars on the maps of New England, it would be so sparse. But I always try to encourage women to, if you open your home up as a point of light in your community and then put the stars on the map and see how many how much more impact that could have if every single home in the church was using their home as an outpost for the church, bringing people in, inviting your neighbors, sitting with some mother who's, you know, on the verge of having a nervous breakdown because they've been up all night and their kids are whiny. I just talked to one this morning who's got one that's having tantrums, and I'm like, I know it's hard. You know, just being available is huge, and being a place where people know that they're accepted and welcomed is something that is not, I think it's undervalued. We don't see that as a big thing in our culture, but it is a big thing because people are displaced and they're trying to find their way and their meaning, and a place where they can come and land and be taken care of a little bit is a huge place. And you have a chance to give them the gospel and show them Christ's love. And I always think it's, you know, the other great commission, I call it, you know, it's huge. It's a lot of work, but it's so, there's so much possibility there. You know, people will not always enter your church, especially here where it's so secular, but they will come if you ask them to come for coffee or to have a play date. So my kids make fun of me for this, but I bought a jumpy house for my grandchildren. And it is huge. Like that thing, people will come just like that because they want their kids to get the exercise out, and the moms need a break, and they will come and talk, and they can be ministered to that way. Not just by me. I mean, I feel like I'm always encouraged too, you know, when I'm with other younger moms who are wanting to do the right thing. I feel like I'm the one who's encouraged. Like I'm the one who's blessed, you know?
Yeah. So. I think you're exactly right. Especially in, I mean, I live in Virginia, but I live in a more progressive community. And, you know, people think it's the South, but it doesn't really feel culturally like the South. And I found hospitality was the way, and people were so shocked almost to be invited to our home. And I realized I had such an opportunity with that it stands out because people are living such individual lives. They're not in any sort of corporate or community groups. And so to be invited into something like that is truly, people were almost shocked and not quite sure what to do with that.
Yeah.
But also appreciative. Everyone wants to be invited and welcomed in. So
absolutely. And people are lonely, especially in the context of this pandemic and all that. People are lonely, so lonely. And if you call them, I mean, I've set up the house so that I can do a lot of entertaining, and I have a patio with a bunch of little tables and chairs out front. And if you invite someone over for iced coffee, like iced coffee is the thing here. We consume a lot of it, and want to come over for iced coffee, or even just if it's not in the house, just, you know, do you want to do a grocery run? I'm going to go pick blueberries. Do you want to come pick some blueberries with me? Do you want to run to the grocery store, or do you need me to deliver you a coffee? I mean, it doesn't have to be in your house. Like it can be just the spirit of hospitality and friendship, really, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've helped us to kind of understand your regional context, but I want to now talk about being a small church pastor's wives, because most pastor's wives are at small churches where maybe their husband is the only staff member. Their church runs, you know, kind of the numbers you've mentioned. So it's not just in the Northeast that women are experiencing that. And so I really want to hear from you and for you to be able to give voice to what women in these roles in these small churches are experiencing. So could you maybe start with some of the challenges? What are some of the challenges that you think are unique to small churches for pastors' wives?
I think just the variety of work that you end up doing, not because you want to always, but because it has to be done. So a lot of times, you know, we have it in our head that we have to work within our own gifting. And sometimes that's not possible or it's not needed at that moment. And so sometimes I can feel like a jack of all trades, but, you know, master of none, because I really haven't had the chance to, you know, hone the gifts that I would like to, or that I think should be honed. But I think a lot of times too, where I am, where Peter basically serves as youth pastor, associate pastor, he kind of just, everything so there's the teaching pastor, and we try to make it so that he can actually teach and mm-hmm. study, you know, and that's a help to him. But I think being a help to Peter is that sometimes things do, balls get dropped, you know, and being somebody who kind of just smooths the way for other people so that everyone doesn't realize, oh, so-and-so forgot, you know, not calling attention to, you know, the things that people didn't get done by choice or by whatever, bad planning or whatever, just being able to smooth the way and be a help. I think that that's been something that I haven't naturally wanted to do. I feel like I'm very judgy when it comes to incompetence. Like, why didn't that get done? You know, why is this, do they even want to be doing, you know what I mean? Like that yes. type of thing. But I've just learned, you know what? There's a grace in just covering that and just moving forward. So people, you know, the whole church doesn't need to know that everything was late or something was not planned properly. You know what I mean? So yeah. A lot of times I feel like we end up doing that type of things behind the scenes, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know?
How have you learned to do that with joy in a servant's heart?
Oh, I don't know. I just feel like whatever God gives us for the day, that's like, he hands it to us. This is what I want you to do. How are you going to respond? You know, the hard things in ministry, they're there to teach us humility and to drive us to him. So I can choose my reaction, you know, but I can't always choose what I'm given in life. So one of the things that I've learned with working with teens is that women are always going to be affected by their emotions and their passions. And we, you know, have to learn that we can't be controlled by that. You know, my circumstances might not be right, but that doesn't mean that my emotions cannot be right as well. You know, we have to keep those things in perspective. But, and of course, you know, that's not how our church is run. Our church is not like this big dysfunctional thing, but it's a lot of times there are things that slip through the radar and you do end up just kind of like filling in the little gaps and keeping things running. And I think that's what mothers do anyway, you know. I forgot my lunch. I forgot my papers.
I think for women in this situation, and a lot of pastors, even if it's not a small church, they may wear multiple hats or their husband wears multiple hats. So how have you learned to kind of catch all the things that you're saying you're catching, but to live with limits?
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes having to say no. How do you know when maybe you can't do that?
I don't know. I feel like God gives you a sense, you know, you're relying on the Holy Spirit for your, you know, marching orders for the day. You just kind of have a sense, I think. And that sounds so like fluffy, but sometimes I think God will just say, you know what, you should jump in and do that. Or, and I'm not hearing audible voices, but you just get the sense I should do this. Or maybe God will bring it to your mind that maybe so-and-so should do this. Maybe this would be a good thing for them to grow into, or, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. I don't know if I've actually learned that well. I don't know, but I do have to say no. You know, we do say no. Peter and I, especially in the fall when things get really busy because of our family commitments and the harvest and all that stuff, we sit down and we organize our calendar so that we can actually see what we have on our plates, because the church is not up to us. You know, the church is not going to rise and fall with us. That's for sure. You know, this is what we're planning with the youth ministry, and this is what we're planning in our own ministries. And these are the people we're having over, blah, blah, blah. These are our birthday parties and grandchildren's, you know, you have to, when you actually plug everything into a calendar and you look at what you have to do, sometimes you can't take on what you think you can take on. So, you know, it's God's business to grow the church and sustain it. Not me.
So. I think I find having margin for the things that come up, you know, sometimes, or this week, there's someone in my life who I'm like, she lost a family member to death, and I really want to be able to do something special for her, and having margin for that is important. Yep. Are there any other challenges that you think are unique for the small town pastor's wife?
I don't know. I think just like for me as a youth as a youth pastor's wife, I think because of my stage in life where I'm still homeschooling children, I feel like things go in seasons and I'm not able to always do what I want to do, or I feel like I'm being hindered. I just think that Satan just toys with us with that type of thing. Like, you're not doing what you should be doing, or you're doing, you know, too much. He's the master mind manipulator sometimes. And just saying, you know, like, Lord, this is what I have to work with today. This is my schedule. These are my kids' needs. We have a little, an 8-year-old son who has, you know, he needs a lot of attention. I'm homeschooling him right now. And so just balancing all of that is, I think just requires so much wisdom. Because I mean, at the end of this sounds so callous. Okay. One of the things about New England is that we're just very frank, but at the end of the day, the church may, you know, the church may be there or may not be. And that's not my only role mm-hmm. and my main role. I'm the only one who can mother my kids, you know, and I have to do that. So just balance and being wise about praying for wisdom. I don't know.
I think it's good though for, you know, you and I don't have grandkids yet, but I am in the stage of one of my children just went off to college. I have teenagers. I think it's good for the younger women to hear you saying, and I'm going to say too, we're still figuring this out. You don't reach this stage where you like, oh, I finally have it down, because your life changes, your circumstances change. Right. And so you're constantly, I mean, God designs it that way so that we'll seek him and follow him and his leadership versus our own agenda.
Right.
And I also just want to highlight what you said. This year, sending my son off to college, I thought I would get to this point and I would have a lot of regrets and like, oh, there's things that I didn't say, or I didn't teach him. And you know what? I did not do it perfectly, but I truly feel like I was faithful to parent him as God asked me to.
That's awesome.
And to be able to come to that point and realize part of it was about 5 years ago, I felt like God was saying, you have 5 years left with him at home.
Yeah.
That's where your focus must be. Yeah. It's almost like having preschoolers again, when you have teenagers. They need so much attention, right? And so much parenting, because mm-hmm. they're going through so much emotionally and growth and spiritual growth and all that. And it's a really exciting time. It's also a really tiring time.
Right.
But for pastors' wives who are listening, I just want to say, I'm so glad I did that. I'm so glad mm-hmm. that I set some things aside with church so that I could be available, engaged with my children. And I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
That you're even further than me, and you're saying it, you know, I would imagine you're saying it's worth it. That is so much more important for us. Yeah. And as he gives us other opportunities, yes. But yeah, do you want to add anything to that or
no? And I just think that you're now, like, as you have grandchildren too, your time gets, you know, you're busier. Mm. You think, oh, the kids are going to go to college and things are going to get easier. But you know, we have three married children, and you're like, last night we, set up a FaceTime to talk with my son, Matt, and his wife, Lydia. And we try to keep up with them on a daily, you know, a weekly basis or whatever. And there's all of these ways to stay connected, but they all take time.
Yeah.
And you want to make the time for them because they're your kids, you know, and they're really important to you. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And I don't think you'll ever regret the time that you spent in your kids. And I will say this, as I observe people. I learn from observing. I think, okay, I love what this woman does. I'm gonna strive to be that way. Or, you know, I need to be this way. I'm not, you know, I see this deficiency in myself, and she could help me with that. And one thing that one friend said to me, it just stuck with me, because I know from talking with lots of moms who have had, you know, lots of heartaches with teens and things like that. It's easy when they're in the teen years to think, okay, now I can take my break. And it is the time when you actually have to really dig in. And that's right. I had a friend, I was considering this thing that had been presented to me, and it would have taken me away from the home a little bit more than I am able to. And my friend said, I have seen so many women who either get a job, not because they have to, but because they feel like, okay, now I can do something for me in the teen years. And it's almost like they wipe their hands of the situation and say, okay, I'm done. And it's doesn't end well. You know, I'm not saying that that's always the case, but she's like, do not take your focus off right now. Like, you can't do it. And I was so I was so thankful for that. She wasn't even saying it necessarily to me for my situation, but she was saying it in context. And I was like, she's right. I've never put those pieces together. I need to be careful of that, because that is exactly my tendency. Like, oh, now the kids are grown and I can, you know, do yeah, it's going to be a party. But no, the kid, you know, I have grandchildren to consider, and my own daughters need me to be, you know, a help and a mentor to them. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, I'd like Titus II mentoring as well. And, you know, if the women in the church aren't being discipled, who does that fall on? Mm-hmm. It's on the older women, you know? Mm-hmm. And so yeah. It's mm-hmm. so important. That's our thing. Mm-hmm. We have to jump in and yeah. be faithful there and stay connected, because the flesh is selfish. We want to do what we want to do. And, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. God's word knows what it's talking about. We need to do what God wants us to do.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that pull as well. Just like, well, I've been there, done that, and I'm going to mm-hmm. take a break now. But really, yep. I'm probably just getting started as in terms of what the Lord would have me to do in parenting and in the church and all that. And I don't mean adding to my schedule, but just right. being available to invest mm-hmm. in people and stay engaged with people. So that's really good thoughts. I would also like to talk about friendship, because I would imagine in a small church, a church where you've been there for 30 years, I wonder, I think this happens in all different sized churches, but do you ever face scrutiny or maybe even criticism over favoritism, showing favoritism to people, actually having deep friendships? Or how do you experience that, and how do you navigate that?
All right. I don't know. I don't know if I've ever experienced scrutiny over that. I would say I've been there for so long that I feel like we are a family. Like, they know all my warts. I know all of their warts. It's like, it's not like, okay, we're all just tolerating each other, but the group is actually a lovely group. Like, they're very accepting. And I've never actually had someone say, well, you're not doing this, or you're not doing that, or I feel left out. I feel like at church too, like I do have close friends at church. I will say that. And I do have women that, you know, we would say, if I were to die, I would leave them, my kids to them. You know, we're that close. Like, I trust them implicitly. Like, you know, some friendships are not that way. And it's not that they all have to be the same way, but, you know, we can, you know, at church, we're kind and helpful and whatever to everyone. And then there are friendships that are just deeper, and we don't actually, you probably wouldn't know that from being at church, because we're not like clicky or, mm-hmm. you know, it's more done outside of the church. But, I do have a lot of, friendships. I feel like you make friendships too in, unusual places when you're in ministry. Like, some of my good friends are like 80 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would not have expected that as a younger mom. Like, oh, and a lot of times, just personality wise, you're working with people that you probably naturally wouldn't mesh with, but you've been working together for so long that you really appreciate and love those people, and you see their strengths and their weaknesses, and they see yours, and you complement each other. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah, and the other thing that I think is unique to my situation, and that sounds so cliche because every pastor's wife, I think, thinks their situation is unique, don't you
think?
Right,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. We always have some big thing. But anyway, I do have a ton of family nearby. So because of our agricultural roots, my mom is nearby, my sisters are nearby, all of my cousins are nearby. So I have a lot of friendships there too. And Peter's mom, my sister-in-laws, they're all really close by, and we're all really close. So that's cool. I don't ever feel like I'm I do feel like I'm lonely sometimes, but I don't feel like it's because I don't have friends. If mm-hmm. I'm lonely, it's because I'm not reaching out, or, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm going to have a little pity party or whatever, you know, look at all the, look at how, you know, horrible things are for me. But in reality, I have a lot of friends inside the church and outside the church. And I think it's hard because of my family. We have so many things going on that I have to make time for my friendships mm-hmm. in the church. And that mm-hmm. might be different than other places, but.
I love what you're describing, Sarah, because you're describing a place where you have deep roots and where it seems that a lot of people have deep roots, that they've been there and there's a community feel. Yeah. And I think, you know, I live in a transient place where people don't have roots. And I would imagine that many small town or small church people, they have similar, this to me, I'm trying to say, this is a joy and an advantage.
Of
having the roots and having the community feel. And I think we can learn so much from, especially being where you are in a largely unchurched area, that your church has to be your family. I mean, this is, you don't have somewhere else to go when you get unhappy with somebody.
Right.
And so how you, and I would imagine you have learned so much about how to love as scripture calls us to love, because you are rooted there and the people around you are rooted there. So do you have any thoughts about that?
And I think I think this is specific to this area. I grew up in a church where I was there my entire life. And then I moved to Peter's father's church, you know? So I think it's almost like a marriage where you go into it knowing we're going to take the good and we're going to ignore the bad and we're going to do what we can to build this thing up. And I think that is something that is specific to New England and not probably not just to New England. I'm sure any rural place where there's not a ton of churches to choose from. But it is a beautiful thing, really, when you think about it. I mean, loving never comes, we don't have to be taught to love when things are easy, you know. Mm-hmm. Loving, the choice to love comes in when things are, you know, rough and hard and ugly and you know, and really being long suffering and forbearing with people happens when you have to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other joys that you have ministering in a small church in New England?
I think one of the neatest things is that, like, me and all of my friends had children together, and we, you know, I had them in my house and they were in the jumpy. I have pictures of my kids with their kids in the jumpy seats, and now their kids are married. We've gone to their weddings and now they're having children. And so, not that they're all still in the same church, but just having that whole history, we have got a long, long history with these people. And it's like family.
Sounds great.
So when we were having babies, they were bringing meals. When I had mono like 8 years ago, and I had people bringing me food and sitting with me, and, you know, they're just all up in your business, and it's okay, you know?
Yes. I'm thinking everyone's listening and thinking, we need to move to New England. It sounds great. But I would imagine it's hard for outsiders. I mean, you have a unique place because you've grown up there and you know the culture. Yeah. And wow, how amazing that God has you there and he's using you there. And we just, you know, I would just encourage listeners to pray for Sarah and her husband, Peter, and their church and the other pastors and pastors' wives in New England. Yeah. I'm thankful. I'm thankful that we have brothers and sisters there.
Yeah. And we really do. We definitely are needing pastors and church planters to come to this area. My parents' church is in Plymouth, Massachusetts. So the birthplace of this country, celebrating 400 years. And the church that they have been deacon and deacon's wife in for 40 years is basically has been without a pastor for 10 years.
Wow.
And they are still this faithful little group of people that are just still holding on. They have done everything. And, you know, you don't know what God's going to do if they want the church to close, but we need people to come to this area. And, you know, the need is great. And people that are in the church are there for the most part, all in. They're not there for any other reason. There's no benefit to being there, you know, mm-hmm. except for family and church and growing together. But mm-hmm. yeah. So I think that there's a lot of sincerity in the churches.
Well, if you're listening and I would just encourage you to pray and ask God, would he be calling you and your husband, or maybe you're a pastor and you're listening, is he calling you, especially if you're considering church planting?
Yes.
He the call.
If you're considering a church plant, do I know a church for you? And you know, when you think about it, it's part of the problem with this area is that it's very expensive to live here.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of the smaller churches cannot afford to support a pastor right off the bat. And being bivocational is not always something that people want to do. But if you're thinking about church planting anyway, and you would have to be bivocational anyway, mm-hmm. I know a congregation that has about 20 faithful old saints that would cheer you on.
And probably bring you cranberries.
And bring you lots of cranberries.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today. It was great to get a little glimpse into your life and context. And it makes me grateful for you and for your church, for the Christians in New England. And aww. We're just so glad to get to meet you today. And I say we, the listeners and I, get to meet you today. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm so thankful for you and your writings. They've been such an encouragement to me.
Well, thank you, Sarah.
Really?
Thank you.
Friends, thanks so much for listening to By Faith. If you're enjoying this season, I would love it if you would consider sharing the podcast with a pastor's wife in your life. I want to be an encouragement and help to women like you and me who are serving Christ all across the globe. Join me next week as I talk with Jen Wilkin. Jen joins me to talk about women who have the gift of leadership. She shares what I call her origin story, how she got into teaching the Bible, what surprising things God never wasted in her life experience, and much, much more. I cannot wait to share this insightful conversation with you. And until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.